This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The West Virginia Senate has passed legislation that creates a sexual assault victim's bill of rights. Dave Mistich details that bill and another piece of legislation in the works that aims to help victims.
The bill seeks to codify best practices in the wake of a sexual assault. For example, the bill would allow victims to choose someone to accompany him or her to a hospital or other healthcare facility and to attend proceedings concerning the alleged assault, including police and prosecution interviews, as well as court. Senator Mike Wolfel is a lead sponsor of Senate Bill 39. He says the purpose of the bill is to modernize the way sexual assault victims are treated.
I believe that in our state, in virtually any state, you have probably one out of three or four girls is sexually abused in her lifetime, and probably one out of seven boys. So it's a grossly underreported crime.
Senate Bill 39 passed on a 33-0 vote and now heads to the House. A companion measure, Senate Bill 36, seeks to expand DNA testing and streamlines the process of obtaining results. Senator Wolfel, who is also the lead sponsor of that legislation, outlined some of the issues that brought about the bill.
The rape kit, once it gets to the state police lab, sits there on average 440 days. So you can have frequently, if not commonly, a two-year wait, a delay between a rape and the evaluation of the evidence. Can you imagine how many sexual assault victims after 2 years have turned the page in their life? So that's unacceptable.
The Senate Health Committee is expected to take up that bill.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich at the Capitol.
Marshall County, Kentucky is still reeling from the school shooting that left two students dead and another 18 injured. As with so many communities around the country, people are searching for answers, including how the shooter got the gun. As Nicole Irwin reports, 27 states have laws requiring safe storage of firearms to prevent child access. Kentucky does not.
Oh, wait, this is the elementary school. Can I pause?
Our students and staff are safe. All information regarding this morning's shooting incident at Marshall County High School will come through the
It's a message
office.
No parent wants to receive, a shooting at your child's school. Heather Adams is in line with more than 100 cars on Kentucky Route 95, just a mile from North Marshall Middle School, where students were bused from Marshall County High. Adams has a 15-year-old at the high school and a 10-year-old at the elementary school. Both are safe. Earlier, she says she was at the high school with frantic parents looking for answers about their children.
I, you know, noticed a lady that was distraught and couldn't find her child, so I was, you know, texting with my son and, you know, asking, you know, do you know where this child is? Is this child safe? And stayed with her while we waited, and that was the shooter's mother. I held her hair while she threw up.
Adam says the mother was in shock.
The shooter took the gun out of her closet and called her and said there's a shooting.
And he was scared.
And that he was scared.
Kentucky State Police have not confirmed how the shooter obtained the handgun used at the school. But if Adams' account proves accurate, it fits a strong pattern. A report by the U.S. Secret Service and the Department of Education found that over two-thirds of students who use guns in violent acts at school got those guns from their own home or that of a relative. That's partly why 27 states have some sort of child access prevention law to encourage the safe storage of firearms and make adults liable if children get access to guns.
We know that those laws work.
That's Hannah Shearer, staff attorney at the Giffords Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence, the legal and policy organization formed after Congresswoman Gabby Giffords was shot in the head in Tucson.
There's research that states that have child access prevention laws have successfully reduced unintentional gun injuries among children and also child suicide. So we know that in states with those laws, fewer kids are getting their hands on their parents' guns and harming themselves with them. So
Kentucky, Ohio, and West Virginia do not have such a law. Kentucky State Senator Gerald Neal from Louisville introduced a child access law in the last legislative session.
Young people are losing their lives to carelessly stored firearms. And what I wanted to do was lift up the discussion about that. It's intolerable for us not to be proactive about preventing that.
Neal says his bill is not about gun control, but about gun safety. Still, it went nowhere. In Ohio, a similar bill met a similar fate in the last three sessions. The Ohio Valley region has a high percentage of state lawmakers who get a positive rating from the National Rifle Association. An analysis of the NRA's recent ratings show Kentucky has the nation's highest percentage of legislators who got at least an A-minus grade from the NRA. The NRA declined to comment. Still, Heather Adams says people have to speak up about gun owner responsibility.
You have to keep your guns locked, the ammunition needs to be locked, and they need to be locked up in separate places.
This is not the first school shooting in West Kentucky. 20 years ago, a student opened fire on a prayer group at Heath High School, just 30 miles from Marshall County. The shooter got the guns from a neighbor's garage.
I don't care if you've raised your kids to not know how to touch the guns. It doesn't matter. Children are impulsive, their brains are not fully developed, and they will act accordingly. And this is what happens.
For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Nicole Irwin.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:50. Slick road conditions are causing some school delays this morning. The following county school systems will operate on a three-hour delay: Nicholas, Pocahontas, Randolph, and Webster counties. On a two-hour delay today, Barber, Braxton, Clay, Doddridge, Fayette, Gilmer, Greenbrier, Hardy, Harrison, Lewis, Marion, Monongalia, Pendleton, Pleasance, Preston, Ritchie, Taylor, Tucker, Tyler, Upshur, and Wetzel County schools will operate today on a two-hour delay. Berkeley County is one of the fastest-growing counties in West Virginia. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, between 2013 and 2016, the population grew by 4,300 people. It's also the second most populated county in the state. With big businesses like Procter & Gamble moving in, it seems like the population will only continue to grow. So how does the county handle that? Liz McCormick sat down with Sandy Hamilton, Executive Director of the Berkeley County Development Authority, to talk about challenges in the growing region and her thoughts on the county's overall impact on the state.
So what I want to talk with you about today is growth in the Eastern Panhandle and kind of the challenges that come with that growth, but also the benefits that come with the growth here in Berkeley County and the impact that has on the state.
There is tremendous growth, and there doesn't seem to be any backtrack, and we're moving forward with a lot of diverse businesses that are coming in and manufacturers, which I think is especially exciting. What we're seeing is an influx of interest in businesses that are very different. And along that line, that's going to assist us with a couple of our biggest challenges. One that immediately comes to mind is workforce. Since we are seeing different types of businesses, it's nice that the workforce will be able to accompany that. And that, I mean, you know, as our youth and people are starting to enter the workforce from educational facilities in our area, they're able to take on a job that they may have had to travel for in the past, but those jobs are coming to Berkeley County now. So it's nice that if you have a certain skill set or a certain type of occupation that you're really interested in doing as a career, that you don't have to leave home for it. And the other, of course, huge challenge is the infrastructure.
And I'd like to go back to the workforce challenge. The whole state struggles with this issue, is the opioid epidemic. I want to ask, how does that struggle, that issue, impact the workforce challenge here in Berkeley County?
It certainly impacts the workforce. I'm the eternal optimist, though. I'll just throw that disclaimer out. And I think that, you know, one of the best treatments for that epidemic is a good job and a career and a good feeling of self-worth about what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, there's lots of reasons that people fall into that addiction. But I think that, you know, one of the things we can offer is a good viable job and a way to be self-sustaining and support yourself and to feel good about what you're doing day to day and what your contribution is to the community, and ensuring that we're offering some viable options, that we're not ignoring or turning our head and pretending like it's not here, because it certainly is. And I certainly have a lot of sympathy for not only the addict but the families. And I think businesses are becoming more and more proactive to ensure that, you know, some of those red flags that could pop up, that they're able to address that and assist through employee assistance programs and various means that they have to assist their employees versus, you know, termination.
Now I'd like to look at the other challenge you mentioned, infrastructure. What does that entail?
Funding for the infrastructure is probably the most challenging. And certainly we're looking for creative ways and grants and things that we can do to give them adequate funding. And, you know, the one that immediately comes to mind with funding is, of course, public transportation. And as we're growing, you know, and as we have an influx of people coming into the county to work for the larger employers or even small employers, you know, many of them are coming from areas where there wasn't a need to own a car. They didn't want to own a car. They like to be able to use public transportation to get to and from their job, and they prefer to bike and to walk. And I can see that, you know, there's going to be more and more of a need to have a very good public transportation system.
So what is it about Berkeley County that big businesses find so appealing? What is it about Berkeley County that draws these big businesses here?
I think big businesses are drawn to Berkeley County and particularly West Virginia. There's a myriad of reasons why, but I think the most significant reason why is because of the relationships that we're able to form. I think big business, small business, and everything in between still want to be able to talk to somebody face-to-face and have a conversation. And yeah, we're going to put it in writing, but they also need that eye-to-eyeball contact and that handshake that says, I'm good for my word. Let's put this in writing. Let's move forward on this. We're here to work with you. So more and more I hear, you know, heard it with Macy's, heard it with Quad Graphics, heard it with Ecolab, heard it with Procter & Gamble. You were responsive in person. That's what we give them. And we repeatedly hear that really, it's usually not about the money or incentives. It's about that one-on-one personal interrelation, that contact. To know that, wow, I've got a real person here that cares and really wants us here.
Would you say that kind of like relationship building mentality is kind of a statewide thing that you see with a lot of West Virginians just because of the kind of people we are?
That makes total sense. And, you know, as a native West Virginian and a resident of Berkeley County my entire life, and, you know, I'd love to travel, but I have never, ever, anywhere I've ever been, experienced the work ethic, the honesty, the collaboration, the spirit of the West Virginian. We're just different, and in a good way. And what I see is that West Virginians are just a very different people. We work hard. We're very proud of who we are, but we're very accommodating and we're very welcoming to people coming in. You know, in our state and in Berkeley County, we welcome the diversity and we welcome people coming into our state and treat them like family.
Looking at Berkeley County's role in just kind of the overall future of West Virginia as we continue moving forward, what sort of impact does Berkeley County have on the rest of the state, in your opinion, in terms of what goes on here?
I think going forward, there's several ways that Berkeley County impacts the state. And aside from just, you know, what you would think would be the standard as the tax base and, you know, the revenue and you know, the money. I think what we can continue to do is to provide hope for the rest of the state that, you know, we're West Virginia. We're growing. You don't have to lose people. You don't need to lose business. You can attract manufacturers. You can thrive. And this is how it's done. And yeah, our infrastructure, our terrain's certainly different than the rest of the state. And we certainly have, you know, the I-81 corridor that's totally to our benefit. But, you know, I used to travel quite a bit around the state on a regular basis. And they're beautiful aspects of every area of our state, and there's lots of opportunity. So I think sometimes it's a matter of of ensuring that we realize what our strengths are and we emphasize those and we make it known. And by doing that in Berkeley County, I would hope that there would be a really nice ripple effect and that that would carry on throughout the state of West Virginia.
That was Eastern Panhandle reporter Liz McCormick speaking with Sandy Hamilton, Executive Director of the Berkeley County Development Authority. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.